Welcome to the Republican Professor Podcast. I'm your host again, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. We're happy to have you with us again today. We have a very special guest. We have Senior District Judge Anthony Ishii. Thanks for being here, Anthony. We have a Democrat judge on the podcast, and the topic is the 10-day waiting period in California for firearm transfer for delivery and the Second Amendment. And Judge Ishii was appointed by President Bill Clinton to the federal bench, and he joins us through his judicial writing in Sylvester versus Harris. And that would be Kamala Harris, FYI. And this was filed August 25th, 2014. It's a delightful read. We're going to learn so much today and about the Second Amendment in California. And I'm going to give you the good news first. The good news is that Judge Ishii, is a Democrat judge, got the right answer in this judgment. The bad news is his correct judgment, his correct findings of fact and conclusions of law in Sylvester versus Harris, 41 Federal Supplement, the third edition, page 927, 2014, in case you wanted to know. It's available on Google Scholar if you want to get it. Was overturned by the Ninth Circuit, the Democrats on the Ninth Circuit before President Trump was elected and before Mitch McConnell and Senator Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, helped place some sane people on the Ninth Circuit. Still got a lot of work to do. Still got a lot of work to do. But he, Judge Ishii, is an exception to the general rule, which is about 99% of the time that the Democrat judges get the Second Amendment wrong. Okay. Before Trump, and even after Trump, the appellate judges are getting it wrong. The district judges are getting it right sometimes, but there was an Obama judge in Hawaii that got it right. And there's been I think a couple of other ones that I could name, but we're going to get into this. So you're going to learn about the 10-day waiting period in California and what that has to do with the Second Amendment. We're going to pause for me to get a drink of water. All right, let's get into this. Findings of fact and conclusions of law. This case deals with the constitutionality of various firearms-related statutes. Plaintiffs challenge the 10-day waiting period imposed by California Penal Code Section 268.15, Section A. I'm not going to do the numbers anymore, okay? I'm going to skip over that. And approximately 18 categories of exemptions to the waiting period found in the Penal Code. Plaintiffs contend that the 18 exemptions violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. There's always these exemptions. There's always these exemptions. Plaintiffs contend that the 10-day waiting period violates the Second Amendment. Specifically, plaintiffs contend that the 10-day waiting period violate the Second Amendment as applied to those who already lawfully possess a firearm, as confirmed in the automated firearm system. To those who possess a valid concealed carry weapon license, and to those who possess a valid certificate of eligibility. Plaintiffs do not challenge the 10-day waiting period on a facial basis. Do not challenge the waiting period laws as applied to first-time firearms purchasers, and do not challenge the requirement that firearm purchasers pass a background check. In March 2014, the court conducted a bench trial in this matter. The court has now taken live testimony, deposition testimony, and numerous exhibits. Now, let me just stop right here. The fact that there's a bench trial, it was an enormous success here because that means that Judge Ishii, a Democrat, found that the plaintiffs had standing as a preliminary matter. Because otherwise, what are you doing? You can't have a bench trial if you don't have standing. What are the elements of standing in a federal case? You have to have injury. Plaintiffs have to have injury that was caused by the defendant, redressable by the court. At least those three things. And Democrats typically have not found there to be a harm in violating the Second Amendment. Did you catch that? This guy did. This guy did. Why was that? Well, it's because Republicans were elected to the presidency and to the Senate, the US Senate. And those same Republicans, and I'm talking about George W. Bush, and I'm talking about whoever was running the Senate back then. I forgot. Sorry. Getting these nominations through the Senate changed the makeup of the Supreme Court. And during George W. Bush, the Supreme Court decided Heller. DC versus Heller. And that found that the Second Amendment right, like the other rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights, shocker, protect individual liberty, not the government power, but the individual liberty. I know you're thinking, that's a shocker. I was reading the Third Amendment and I thought that that gave the government power. Yeah, well, it turns out, it's in there to protect people from the government. So Republicans started the ball rolling during the presidency of Barack Obama, although he deserves no credit for this, and in fact could be blamed for any efforts to stop it. The city of Chicago lost when they tried to make Otis McDonald a criminal because he wanted to be able to protect himself effectively, absent the police who were not there and were not reliable. And we found out later, Democrats told us we're racists anyway. So that you can give credit to Republicans. I'm not making this up. It's all right there. It's all right there. At the time, the Ninth Circuit, which is the appellate court federally for California, was dominated by Democrats from the Carter administration and from Clinton. And these guys, especially the Carter guys, they had and there's some bad Republicans sometimes too, okay? We already know that. But the Ninth Circuit precedent was that the Second Amendment does not protect an individual right. So it's like the only one of the Bill of Rights that gives the government power. That's how crazy these people are. And Carter really should have known better, being from Georgia. But he was a Democrat from the South, and the Democrats in the South do not have exactly what I would call a sexy resume on civil rights going back from the Civil War on. And Carter's just a part of that whole thing. So, the stuff that's happening in California is a direct result of a Southern Democrat that doesn't get it that, Otis McDonald might want to protect himself from criminals. Absent the police that are 20 minutes late, if they ever show up, if they ever bother to show up. And by the way, who Democrats now inform us are racist anyway, ever since Black Lives Matter started in 2014. Are you catching all this? All right. All right. In March 2014, the court conducted a bench trial in this matter. I can smell it. Smells like team spirit. The court has now taken live testimony, deposition testimony, numerous exhibits. The parties have completed all briefing and made their final arguments. Given the nature of the challenges made, the court emphasizes that it is expressing no opinion on the constitutionality of the 10-day waiting period in general or as applied to first-time California firearms purchasers. After considering the evidence and the arguments, the court concludes that the statute, the criminal code involving 10-day waiting periods, impermissibly violate the Second Amendment. Yes, that's a direct quote. Yes, impermissibly violate does sound strange to me as well. Is there a permissible violation of the Second Amendment that you have in mind? But he's a Democrat, so he's not used to this. It impermissibly violates the Second Amendment as applied to those. And you can tell I'm not making this up. I'm going to hold it to the screen here. You see that? I'm getting zucked here. You see that? Yes, he says impermissibly violates. As applied to those persons who already lawfully possess a firearm as confirmed by APHIS, to those who possess a valid CCW license, and to those who possess both a valid COE and a firearm as confirmed by the APHIS system. If the background check, next page, on these individuals is completed and approved prior to the expiration of 10 days. Because of the court's resolution of the Second Amendment issue, the court need not reach the 14th Amendment challenges. Okay. You had some fancy schmancy three-letter abbreviations there. What do those mean? The APHIS system is just the computer system that they were using to see who has a gun. CCW means concealed weapon license. And COE is a certificate of eligibility, which basically is a background check that lasts for a year. Okay, so what he's saying is the plaintiffs who have one or more of these things, the government knows they have a gun, as confirmed by the computer system, APHIS. The government knows they have a gun on them, possibly because they have a CCW, and or they have a COE, which the government says on a piece of paper, you have a background check that lasts for from this date to this date, and it's a year long. So why do you have to wait when you go into the gun store? Like as if you were just like a first time gun buyer, gun owner. So what gives? And what I like about this judge, I know he's a Democrat, but we're given this is we're patting Democrats on the back day. That's what this is today. We're going to give him some credit where credit is due. And maybe there it would be great if there were more Democrats like this. Okay. Request for judicial notice. We're going to go through this whole thing. Why? Because there's something you can learn at each part, and we're going to stop and learn it. Request for judicial notice. Parties' positions. Defendant requested that the court take judicial notice of various exhibits. Defendant is the government, in case you're missing that. Defendant argued that each of the exhibits could be judicially noticed as legislative facts because such facts are relevant to the justification for the statutes at issue, the court's legal reasoning, and to the decision-making process. Plaintiffs, those are the people, whose rights are violated. Plaintiffs objected and argued that it was unclear how defendant intended to use the information in the exhibits. Plaintiffs recognized the distinction between adjudicative facts and legislative facts, but contended that they could not determine the admissibility of the exhibits without further clarification. However, relevancy, hearsay, and contestability issues in general with defendants' exhibits make judicial notice under Rule 201 improper. Further, as part of the supplemental briefing, plaintiff stated that once specific portions of the exhibits were identified by defendant in her proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law, plaintiffs would then make arguments in their June 30, 2014 responsive briefing as to those specific exhibits. Why am I spending time on this? Is what you're asking right now. Okay, well, Kamala Harris, who is the current vice president, showed up with a truckload of stuff for the judge and said, let's call these exhibits and we want you to look at them and we want you to mention them and take official notice of them. And the plaintiffs and the judge were like, what the hell are these things? What relevance does this have to your argument? And if it does have relevance to your argument, why don't you just reference them in your argument? And the great inflated Kamala Harris just started throwing stuff at the wall. Like, what about this? What about this? What about, there's this. And I mean, she was just throwing stuff with no understanding or cognition of the relevance to her own case. Now, why do you hear my voice getting a little elevated? Have I ever seen a student do this before? These are the great inflated students. These are the students that think they can get pull one over on you. They're lazy. Sometimes they don't look lazy because they look ambitious. But some of the most ambitious people I've ever met are lazy as hell. Discussion. At the end of the last day of trial testimony, and upon the parties' agreement, the court ordered the parties to include and to cite to specific proposed exhibits and portions of proposed exhibits as a part of their proposed findings of fact, and conclusion of law. A word about that. You might think that the judge just takes in all the information and then he writes the findings of facts and then he writes the opinion. But some judges do this, and he's one of them. And as Roger Benitez is another one that does this, where he asks the parties to write that all out themselves. And then you have this stipulation thing you could work out. Not that the judge is asking for permission of how to rule, but the judge is asking, I want to see how would you put it if you were the judge? And how would you put it if you were the judge? And then the judge takes those proposed findings of fact and the stipulations and the judgment, and he draws from those material to create his own document that eventually gets published. Does that make sense? My business students wonder, if it makes dollars, because if it makes a dollar, it makes 100 cents. And so it does make sense. That one was free. All right. Well, the parties were permitted to file responsive briefing and objections to the proposed findings, including evidentiary objections to any evidence that was included in the proposed findings, and the subject of the defense motion for judicial notice. The court would then make evidentiary rulings based on the briefing and the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. This framework was primarily meant to address the exhibits in the defendant's request for judicial notice. See, this is a stalling tactic. You wouldn't have to do this. Just make the arguments, for God's sake. The framework was designed to provide the court and the parties with a method of determining how and for what purpose an exhibit was being used. Sounds kind of important. I'm going to take a drink of green tea. Defendants' proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law comply with the court's order. In fact, defendant helpfully submitted binders with the exhibits and the specific excerpts that were cited in her proposed finding. Nevertheless, as part of the defendant's June 30, 2014 responsive briefing, defendant defended and addressed exhibits that were part of the request for judicial notice, but were not included in her proposed findings. You're wasting the court's time and you're wasting our time now because we have to talk about it. If defendant did not cite an exhibit or a portion of an exhibit in her proposed findings and conclusion, then the defendant did not sufficiently rely on such evidence. You see what I mean? It's not really even evidence. It's just they're just throwing information at the court. What about this? 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 What about here? Here's a book. Here's a box. Here's this. Here's that. They're just like throwing, like monkeys, throwing feces at the wall at the people looking at them. And it's not helpful because supposedly 100 monkeys can not 100 but 1 million or whatever it is can type the perfect essay, but that's not usually what gets you the A on the essay before AI. And it's a disaster now. But it's just wasting time. It's just wasting time. And it indicates that you don't even know what your argument is. All you want to do is to try to stop the Constitution from being protected in the state of California. And this Japanese judge, this Democrat appointed by Clinton, is said, I don't really like that. I know I'm supposed to be on board with this whole thing, this whole Democrat thing, but I'm not really that interested in that. And I wonder, was it the internment programs in California run by Democrats? Was it that maybe had you stop and think, what are Democrats doing here? Look at the level of commitment they have to making sure that the rights of people continue to be violated by the government in California. I wish, frankly, he would have thought about that before becoming a Democrat, but maybe he did. Maybe he did. And I can't have him on, unfortunately, but we can interact with what he wrote. And it's very good. It's very good. All right. No more throwing stuff against the wall, he's saying. If you want to propose evidence, then use it for God's sake. For God's sake, it better be evidence. Otherwise, it's just information. And we need to get through this. If defendant did not cite an exhibit or portion of exhibit in her proposed findings and conclusions, then the defendant did not sufficiently rely upon such evidence. There was an inadequate demonstration of how such evidence was intended to be used and or how the evidence is relevant. The court will not comb through hundreds of pages of proposed exhibits and make rulings if an exhibit is not actually cited and specifically relied upon by a party. Love this. Love this. And then he's citing precedent to justify that. Accordingly, the court will limit its discussion and consideration to the exhibits and excerpts that were actually cited by the defendant and her proposed findings. Her is Kamala Harris, by the way, the current vice president. See, these are the tactics they use. Just throw information, drown you in lawfare. This judge is saying no. Those exhibits are defendants' exhibits CD through CI, DG, DH, DM, blah, blah, blah. All other exhibits that were included in the defendant's March 24, 2014 request for judicial notice, but that were not cited in the defendant's proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law will not be considered by the court. What a concept. And what a country. As J.P. Moreland, my metaphysics professor, used to say, what a country. The defense exhibit at issue fall into one of four general categories: legislative history, history books, professional journal articles, and a newspaper article. The court will examine each category of exhibits separately. Now, why am I going through this again? Because it's important for you to see how the Democrats operate. He's going to go through four categories of evidence, proposed evidence from the defendant. And this is the stuff that was actually cited by them. And it's not much. It's not much. You got legislative history. There's a couple history books, and there's a newspaper article. And what was just excluded from evidence? He said hundreds of pages that had no relevance whatsoever to what the government is doing in the name of civil rights. And I'm so awesome because I'm a Democrat. Legislative histories. The Ninth Circuit has approved of taking judicial notice of legislative history. Defendant has limited the portions of legislative history that she wishes the court to consider. In their June 30 responsive briefing, plaintiffs did not address these specific portions of legislative history. That's because plaintiffs don't care. They're not worried about legislative history. Legislative history is not threatening to the Second Amendment because the legislation occurred after the Second Amendment. And psst, in case you want to know, this is what constitutional law is all about. If you got a constitution and you got later legislation and they conflict, constitution wins. Okay. Not that hard. It's not like normal statutory law where you have an earlier statute. And you have a later statute. The later statute conflicts with the earlier statute. Guess which one wins? The later one wins. That's statutory law. In constitutional law, you have a constitution, you have legislative history, and then eventually legislation that passes that conflicts with the constitution. Guess which one is supposed to win? The one that's supposed to win is the constitution. That's the whole point of having a constitution. That's the whole point. Yes, they are missing the entire point of constitutional law. Yes. Okay, so the plaintiffs don't care. Therefore, the court takes judicial notice. Okay, all right, take judicial notice of your legislative history. You think it's all awesome? We're not going to be that impressed. Category two, history books. Ooh, history. I love books. What are you talking about? History books. This is very interesting. We're going to make it a short day today, okay? Because we're going to have to break this up already, and I got to get some more green tea. I'm low on green. So what history books? In their June 30, 2014 responsive briefing, plaintiffs did not make any evidentiary arguments related to the specific excerpts from defendants' history books. Nevertheless, the court has conducted an independent evaluation of the excerpts submitted. Okay, you got an excerpt from a book by Jack Larkin, Reshaping Everyday Life, 1790 to 1840, Harper, 1988. The excerpts from this book deal with the nature of American life from 1790 to 1840. Defendant, remember that's the government, that's Kamala, seeks to admit these excerpts in order to demonstrate that, given the nature of the way of life between 1790 and 1840, most people would have been unable to readily obtain firearms. This is their historical research. Because the geographic and economic conditions did not lend themselves to a person being able to immediately purchase and possess a firearm, defendant, that is the government, contends that the citizens of 1790 and 1840 would have no quarrel with a government-imposed waiting period before obtaining a firearm. You see how that works? It was really hard to obtain a firearm immediately back then, just because of the nature of the technology, the marketplace, geography, transportation. Therefore, the government now can do that arbitrarily, and you can't say anything about it. Okay, that's their argument. Though it appears that this type of historical work has been consulted in cases such as McDonnell Heller and Peruta, that was back when Peruta had the right answer. The information contained in that is not particularly relevant to this case. The exhibit appears to be generalized historical text that touches on many aspects of American life as it existed between 1790 and 1840. What the exhibit excerpts do not contain is any information regarding firearm waiting period laws that may have existed between 1790 and 1840. Or information regarding the understanding of the Second Amendment during this time frame. This is like a really bad paper before AI, okay? That, the kid has sleepy pillow lines, when he turns it in. This Kamala, her hair is messed up. Who knows what she was doing? She has no idea why she's using this book, but she found it. She found it somewhere in the library at the last minute. And she's like, does this make us be able to do whatever we want? And the judge is like, no. I love this guy. Is that type of information? It is that type of information, not American life in general or the economic and geographic condition of the times, that are relevant. The Constitution structures the national government, confines its actions, and in regard to certain individual liberties and other specific matters, confines the actions of the states. He's quoting Edmondson versus Leavell, Concrete Company. Okay, so these are some good quotes. I'm not going to quote them all. I'm skipping down a little bit. That naturally occurring non-governmental forces, that naturally occurring non-governmental forces may have limited the ability of some individuals in some parts of the country to readily obtain firearms does not show that it was understood around 1791, the year the Second Amendment was adopted, or 1868, the year the 14th Amendment was adopted, that the government could impose a waiting period between the time of purchase and the time of possession of a firearm. It's just a non sequitur. That's me. The court does not find the excerpts to be relevant. And then there's another book, since it's of excerpts by a book from a book by Adam Winkler called Gunfight, the Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms. That's from W.W. Norton, 2013. I've seen that book. But incidentally, Adam Winkler, his dad was Irving Winkler, Irvin or Irving Winkler, who produced the film Rocky. Have you ever heard of that? He's a major producer in Hollywood. And Adam Winkler, his son, teaches law at UCLA. This exhibit discusses some of the laws in existence around the founding era. However, there is nothing in that book that discusses waiting period laws between 1791 and 1868. Do you notice a pattern here? This judge is saying the topic is waiting periods here, guys. When you imposed this law upon the citizens of California in violation of the Second Amendment, that's me saying that, but you impose this law, okay, upon gun dealers, and it affects people even doing private party transfers. They have to wait 10 days to get a used gun from a private party. Okay, when you put this on the entire population, including people with a concealed weapons permit with a gun on them at the time they're buying the gun, and you say you have to wait 10 days. Why? Because you need a cooling off period. And we need to be able to do a background check. That's the issue that you need to focus on with your evidence. And why aren't you doing that? Maybe it's because you don't have any evidence that's relevant to why the state can just ignore the Second Amendment and just do whatever the hell it wants. I think that's a pretty good summary of what he's saying. I think he could have said exactly that, and they would have had the same reaction. So, because there's no discussion of waiting periods during the relevant time periods, and what are those relevant time periods? 1791 and 1868. Remember, he's saying this in 2014, before Bruin, before Cayetano at the Supreme Court. Because there's no discussion of waiting period laws between 1791 and 1868, the court does not find the ex excerpts from this exhibit to be relevant and declines to consider them. So you got two history books. They're both irrelevant. You got stacks and stacks, boxes and boxes of material, totally irrelevant, that the defendant, don't think is relevant because you're not citing it in your argument. And now you got professional articles. So let's go to professional articles. And you know what? We're going to get right up to standing, which is the next one. So we're going to professional articles and newspaper article will be done for today. And then we're going to hit standing next time. In their June 30th, hold on, hold up. In their June 30th, 2014 responsive briefing, plaintiffs did not make any evidentiary arguments regarding the specific excerpts from the professional journal articles cited by the defendant. Depending on their use in a case, social science studies can be reviewed by courts as legislative facts. Legislative facts can be considered more liberally and are outside the strictures of Federal Rule of Evidence 201. The court finds that the excerpts from the defendant's exhibits, and then there's several references there, are relevant. Given the absence of additional argument from the plaintiffs on these exhibits, the court will consider these exhibits as legislative facts. However, the court will not take judicial notice of these exhibits under Rule 201. With respects to the specific ones, he doesn't say exactly which quotations are being used from which journal articles here. There's little codes that are given, and we're not going to get into that. But with respects to exhibits DM and DQ, just to give you an idea, what I'm glossing over those, and that's in the original text, but we're glossing over those. These are portions of articles that relate to suicide studies in Australia. Exhibit DM is a 1994 study of 33 survivors of attempted firearm suicide who were all treated at Westmead Hospital, a teaching hospital at the University of Sydney. Exhibit DQ is a 1999 study of suicide statistics from Tasmania, Australia. This gives you an idea of some of the stuff they're throwing at the court. The court does not find these articles to be probative. There are cultural, societal, and geographical differences between Australia and the United States. These types of differences can manifest themselves not only when comparing suicide statistics between the two countries, but also when comparing the suicide rates of the states and the territories. Tasmania study, for example, highlights the fact that Tasmania had one of the highest suicide rates of all Australia, yet made up only 2.6% of Australia's total population. In other words, there was something unique that was occurring in Tasmania. Suicide is a complex psychological occurrence. Without further expert guidance, the court is not inclined to consider the two studies that focus on two small portions of a separate country. Okay. They are throwing everything they possibly can at this judge, and including like suicide rates and studies and different countries. And I just want you to think about this for a second. What does suicide have to do with this? Even in the United States. I don't think the defendants know. I think the defendants, the government, Kamala Harris, I think she's just throwing stuff against the wall and hoping it sticks. Because the issue here is a 10-day waiting period. And as you're going to find out, the legislative reason for a 10-day waiting period was to avoid crimes of passion. So it was to allow for a cooling off period and for a background check. The plaintiffs here are not challenging in general either of those things. They're only challenging them as applied to them specifically because either they have a concealed weapon permit, in other words, they have a weapon on them legally when they go into the grocery store, when they go into the gun store. What about that? Well, how's preventing suicide apply to the 10-day waiting period in that circumstance? Or they have a background check that lasts for a whole year. And a background check includes whether you've been institutionalized in a mental health facility, or they're a current gun owner and they already have a firearm. They've passed a background check before. They're a lawful gun owner. Maybe they don't have it on them with a concealed weapon permit, but they have it at home, and the government knows this. So, what's a 10-day waiting period do for that as it relates to suicide? You see, the defendant doesn't care. They just want to get the bobcat out, which is like a tractor. It's kind of an older reference, and shovel as much crap at the judge as possible. Poor judge has to wade through all this stuff. Okay. With respect to exhibit EJ, this exhibit is several pages from a book entitled Reducing Gun Violence in America. Only one page of the excerpts has potential relevance. The one page discusses a study that found a reduction in the firearm suicide rate for people over the age of 55, and the reduction may have been due to the Brady Act waiting period. The book page appears to have been written by the study's authors. The court will consider portions of the underlying study. Because the court will consider portions of the underlying study, additional information from the study's authors is relevant. The court will consider Exhibit EJ, but will not take judicial notice of Exhibit EJ under Rule 201. Okay. Newspaper article. And then we're going to be done for today. Exhibit GN is a 2014 newspaper article from the Washington Post, whose headline reads, "Study Repealing Missouri's Background Check Law Associated with a Murder Spike." Plaintiffs did not address this exhibit as a part of their June 30 responsive briefing. Nevertheless, plaintiffs are not challenging California's background check. Plaintiffs do not argue that they should be exempt from a background check, nor do they argue that the background check is unconstitutional. Rather, they argue that they should not be subject to the full 10-day waiting period between the time of purchase and the time of possession. The Washington Post article purports to describe the results of a study on an issue that is not before the court. Thus, the article is not relevant and the court will not consider Exhibit GN. The next issue is standing. All right. And we got California Guns Federation, Cal Guns, and Second Amendment Foundation, their request for standing. Those are the organizations, and they want standing in this. And well, in the interest of time, I'll just tell you, Cal Guns. They're when you're talking about an organization in a civil rights case, the issue of standing is a slightly different than if it's an individual. It has to do with whether the organization spent money, and as a result of the legislation, okay, and we'll. I'm trying to decide whether I want to go through this or not. The long or the short of it is that Cal Guns does not have direct standing, but the Second Amendment Foundation did have direct standing. Both organizations have representative standing. Okay. And so. That's to say that there has been injury. It was caused by the defendant and it's redressable by the court. And both organizations are plaintiffs in an indirect way as representative organizations. So I think you get that. We can skip two pages there on standing. But I mean, standing is a big issue in federal law because. It's actually a big issue in constitutional law because we have separation of powers, and separation of powers is supposed to protect individual liberty. That's the whole point of it. And the threat to separation of powers can come from any of the three branches of government. Now, when you read the Constitution, Article 1 creates Congress. You wouldn't believe how many people I ask. Are U.S. senators members of Congress? And then they go, no. Just read the Constitution. Article 1, all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States of America, which shall consist of a House of Representatives and a Senate. Yes, U.S. senators are members of Congress. Article 2 creates the presidency. Article 3 creates the Supreme Court and allows for Congress to create inferior courts. And the court is limited in its power to cases and controversies before it in involving real people, real cases and controversies. When you analyze what a case or controversy involves, it involves a real or perceived harm caused by the defendant, redressable by the courts. That's what it is. And what this protects is having a court that serves like a legislature, meaning there's a court and they can't be fired because they don't stand for election and they don't. Like their term doesn't expire. And so they serve during, their lifetime, unless they're a criminal or something, and you can prove that. They can be impeached and they can be removed. There's a removal process. But in general, it's really hard. They have tenure, unlike members of Congress, where, like, for a representative, they, you have a corrupt one, like in the Republican Party, like we did in New York. Well, that can be found out, and then he just loses his seat. You know, it's really hard to do that with a judge if you just don't like their rulings. Well, the temptation would be that this is the worry is that the judges would just act like legislators and just start voting on controversial topics that have no case or controversy before them. In other words, they just start spouting their opinions just in general. And that's not the point of a court. The court is supposed to say what the law is in a specific situation where there's conflict of a specific kind. And so they're limited in that power. And that limited power protects separation of powers, and separation of powers protects individual liberty. So standing is a huge component of protecting individual liberty. Hope you got that. Next time, when we come back, we're going to be getting into the Second Amendment challenge, which is the heart of the whole thing. The plaintiff's contentions, the defendant's contentions, and how this Democratic judge gets the right answer on the 10-day waiting period in California. Thank you for joining me on the Republican Professor Podcast. I've been your host, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. Yes. That was my name when I came out of the womb. The nurse said doctor, and the gynecologist said yes under the mask. And she said, no, I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to the little baby there because I came out with a PhD diploma, and you couldn't read it because there was like some sticky, you had to kind of wipe it off. That's my name, doctor. Lucas J. Mather. And I've been asked to offer you an email address if you want to comment. RepublicanProfessor@substack.com. Feel free to leave a comment. If you have ideas for guests or topics, always happy to hear that. And don't make it too controversial because we kind of shy away from controversy here on Republican Professor Podcast. Well, we hope that you have a great day. Take care.